Welcome to the Every Brain Matters podcast called It's Just Pot, What's the Problem? I'm your host, Aubrey Adams, and director of Every Brain Matters. I'm also a former Colorado mom and a host mom for youth in recovery. Today, we talk to Sonia and Alex, who lost their loved one, Joshua, after having three psychotic breaks caused by marijuana. The first two psychotic breaks were caused by the cannabis plant, the Delta-9 THC, and the last psychotic break was caused by the Delta-8 THC products that are made from CBD and marketed through the hemp industry. Today's marijuana is not like yesterday's marijuana. It's more concentrated, more potent. It's put in more deceptive forms to disguise use from parents, teachers, and employers. They're in vapes and candies. Our children can order these products directly online, and they can even get free products. Delta-8 THC are products that are marketed and produced by the hemp industry here in Texas. What they do is they take their surplus of CBD products and they convert them into variants of THC products. They have Delta-8 THC, Delta-10 THC, and Delta-12 THC, and even making products called THCO, which is an acetate, which is a very strong drug. THC can cause psychosis and addiction. Both Sonia and Alex have lived the marijuana nightmare. We welcome them today, and we are grateful for their courage and strength to speak up. Thank you for joining us today. My deepest condolences to you. Could you please answer this question? It's just pot. What's the problem?
It's not just pot. Pot killed my son. If it wasn't for pot, my son would still be here, without a doubt. So that's what I have to say about that.
Please describe to me how Joshua was prior to his marijuana use.
Josh is my youngest. I have two girls and a boy, Josh. And Josh was born in 1999. He was just, I mean, if I have to say one word, he was an empath. He was an artist. He was just so creative and just such a kind person. That's who Josh was, you know? I mean, like, that's all I can think about whenever I think of Josh. He loved to build. He loved to build, you know, Legos. That was his thing. And from the day he was born, you know, he knew about God, you know, and he was very intuitive. He was such an intuitive kid, really smart. And but Josh was always loved. Josh was always loved.
Alex, how was Joshua? Describe Joshua to us prior to his marijuana use.
Josh was, you know, just the kindest kid that I think I've ever, the kindest person I've ever met. There was never anyone, you know, if you were in a room of people, there was never anyone left out if Josh was in that room. Like, he would immediately pick up on, you know, the outsider and go befriend them. And that was just instinctive for Josh. It was always, you're welcome in my circle. He loved my mom. I mean, obviously my dad too, but he was definitely a mama's boy. Brilliant. So, like, whereas like me and my sister would have to work hard for things, Josh, his brain was just like, you know, superhuman. Yeah, like my mom's, I mean, he just was always thinking and figuring things out. And as far as the creativity and art, I mean, he basically took all of that because my sister and I do not have any sort of artistic abilities at all. But, you know, Josh would just see something. And then the next thing you know, he creates this, you know, he just is over there and looks at this masterpiece. And it's not like he had ever taken any lessons. It just, that was his brain. He was just, you know, it was, he created because he was meant to create. Like, that's how I think of, you know, that's what Josh did. Josh would absorb the beauty of the world and then create things out of
it. He sounds wonderful.
He was.
Let's get to more of the hard part. And I know we've talked about this. Joshua experienced three major psychotic breaks from the high concentrated THC products that they put in vape pens and candies. And the first two psychotic breaks were from Delta 9 THC, which is the natural chemical found in the cannabis or marijuana plant. But his last psychotic break was from the Delta 8 THC products that in here in the state of Texas, they are making from the hemp industry that has a surplus of CBD products. And they're taking the CBD and they're converting it into these Delta 8 products. And they also have other variants like Delta 10 THC, Delta 12 THC, THCO. But the products found in Joshua's room after he passed were Delta 8. So let's briefly talk about the first psychotic break, if you don't mind. And then we'll talk about the second and the third.
So the first one, he was 19. Alex, was he 19?
Mm-hmm. 19.
Yeah. So right as soon as he graduated high school, I mean, he had scholarships to go to college. He could have gone anywhere he wanted to, and the plan was he was going to go to college. He had a scholarship to U of H. He could have gone. He was in what program was that, Alex? I forget the name of
Emerge.
It. Emerge. That's right. And so he had a ticket to wherever he wanted to go. So, but of course, in high school, but he was already smoking weed. But back then, it was, you know, I guess he wasn't vaping. It was just blunts or weed, whatever it's called. But he had already changed in high school. The defiance had already started. He started smoking weed in ninth grade. I didn't even know he was smoking weed. He started hanging around with this group of friends. And once he started hanging around with those friends, everything changed. He was in track. He dropped out of that. He was in, what's the program, Alex? The Christian program?
Oh, Young Life.
Oh, Young Life. He had started Young Life. He dropped out of that. And then, and somehow he passed all his classes and stuff, but he was definitely smoking weed a lot. And then the defiance started, you know, where I couldn't say no to him if he wanted to go out in the middle of the week or, you know, he was just always with his friends. And he still passed, but, you know, he made good grades, but he never studied. He never did his homework. He would sleep a lot. And then he'd come home and sleep for hours, you know, and just, so that was it. So anyway, so then he's like, I'm moving out. I said, why are you moving out? You know, and he's like, but of course the defiance was strong. And so I said, why would you move out? You're going to college, you know, but he wasn't planning on going to college. And so he moved out into an apartment with some friends. And then once he moved out, it's like 2 months before he graduated high school. And then after that, I lost my son, pretty much. He was no longer the son that I described earlier. He didn't call me, you know, there was just this huge wall. It was just a wall went up between us. So all I could do was pray for him. You know, I knew he was up to no good. And he had a job as a server. And then, so one day I told Madeline, I don't know if it was you too, Alex, and I just said, something's up with Josh. I just felt it. I couldn't sleep. And something's going on. I just feel like he's not okay. And then my daughter, Alex, came to my house. She was living across the street. And Madeline came. She's like, Mom, you know, you're right. You know, we need to go check on Josh. They called from work that he's not okay. So we got in the car, I had never been to his apartment. And when we got there, you know, right next to his bed, he had a whole like mason jar full of weed. So he was definitely in psychosis. Oh, Alex, you didn't go with us. It was Madeline that went with us. And I walked in, and when I heard him talking, I said, oh my God, my son's schizophrenic. Like, what happened? You know, he was just talking just like in this whole other spiritual realm, the way he was talking. And then he just started talking about going to LA, that so he was hearing from God and the devil. And so his psychosis was very spiritual, but it was, he always claimed it was God, but it was not God. So he, you know, this voice told him to go to, he had to go to LA. He had his luggage packed and everything. He had his suitcase packed. And so I'm just taking all this in, like, what is going on? You know? And so anyway, that would take forever to tell the whole story, but somehow my daughter Madeline said, cause he had his ticket and everything. And he was convinced that there was somebody there waiting for him. This person didn't even exist. And, so my daughter said she would take him to the airport, but they brought him to me to say goodbye. We were just hoping that he misses, you know, his plane. But, So Alex came home that night from work, and it just got crazy. They started fighting, and then we called the police, and we were trying to get him arrested because that was the only way we could hold him back, you know? And then.
Well, I want to make on that point, I think it's really important for, like, I actually have a coworker on my team who's going through something very similar, and you know, going back to the lack of mental health resources, you get so desperate that you hope your family member ends up in jail. That is the safest place that you can get them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something that you would ever think that you would ever wish on your loved one, but you resort to that desperation when you realize there's nothing else and no other way to save them. Mm-hmm. I mean, what my mom was saying, like, I had to come up with a plan, told my sister, like, pretend you're taking him to the airport and keep driving so that he misses his flight.
Right.
And then he ended up missing that flight. Police come. They weren't going to take him, you know, long story short, he did end up going that night, comes out, tells us that he's, you know, going to get a different job, needs some money. So, my sister and I didn't know, he asked each of us for $100. And then the next thing I know, 5 days later, I get a call from my mom, or a couple of days later, she says, Josh is in jail in Junction, Texas, 5 hours away. So since he, you know, missed his flight, he instead decided to drive. And so he left it, I don't know, in the middle of the night to drive. California is like, what, 20 something hours away. And I guess the only time that I can't believe I'm saying this actually helped Josh, but because he was using the pen on the way, and in the middle of the night, he fell asleep at the wheel, going almost 100 miles an hour. And thankfully, again, I think because of the marijuana and, you know, falling asleep, his body went limp. So the car went into like a ravine and like, I mean, you look at, and there is a picture that I can show you after, how Josh walked out of that alive, A, and B, without being paralyzed for the rest of his life is, you know, a miracle.
It was a miracle. Yeah. I mean, it is a miracle. I don't even say, I don't even think it had anything to do with the weed or him. You know, it was an absolute miracle. God saved my son. It wasn't time for him to go yet. That's all I can think of. He was going 100 miles an hour, and it did. How that car ended up in a tree, but it was like the back of it. The trunk hit. We go pick up Josh from Junction, Texas. He's out of his mind, and there's no like, oh my God, I was in a wreck, nothing. Like, they, when you're in psychosis, you detach from reality completely. It wasn't like, oh my God, I was just in a wreck, I just lost, I, you know, I can't believe I'm still alive, you know. And so we pick him up, and he's still just like, oh, whatever, and you know. So we bring him home from that one, and I'm just calling, it's like, here we go. What do I do with my son? What's wrong with, you know, what's happening to him? I'm calling, you know, friends who were addicts before, who had done the AA program. You know, I'm like, this is happening to my son. What do I do? And, you know, the thing is, though, nobody had experience with cannabis-induced psychosis. it's a whole different thing. It's not alcohol. It's not meth. It's so different. Number one, because nobody has experience with it in Texas. Not one doctor. The mental health hospitals, they laugh. They're just like, no. And this is not psychosis from weed.
Marijuana.
Yeah, it's not marijuana, you know. So he came back. He came back, and I just know, you know, oh my gosh, it's just all this defiance. And finally, we did get him to a mental health hospital. He just started getting crazy. And then, so, I mean, there's three of them, and it's so much. And I've been through so much trauma that really I go blank, but I'm going to just try my best because they all kind of blend in together. And they were all three were so traumatic that if I were to tell you, you would be like, there's no way. That sounds like the movie, you know? But so I know we finally got into a hospital, but the only way we could do it, because he was doing all kind of crazy stuff around the house, like lighting little fires. And I don't remember, but we could not get him to, the only way we could get him to a hospital is if he was trying to kill me or trying to kill himself.
I mean, at one point we had HPD, their HPD was literally coming to our house. I mean, it was like every single day, and every, you know, I have pictures on my phone of literally like five, you know, HPD cops parked outside, and then they come in and then they talk to him and then they come talk to us, and they're like, well, we can't take someone in, you know, just because they have different beliefs from us, and we're looking at them like he's not okay.
Bad enough that we were calling the police and we knew we had to get him hospitalized, but there was no way of doing that. And because he's 19, you know,
it's an adult.
Got to change. You know, he's like, no, I'm fine. And Josh is so articulate that when the cops would get here, he would just put on the straight face and be like, there's nothing wrong with me. What? No. I mean, you know, so Nizza would.
Those are really good points. So the first psychotic break, he did end up getting hospitalized for a little bit. And then he did recover for a little bit after that.
So I want to say, so finally we got him to the hospital. And because he didn't give me permission to know his information, you know, to receive any medical advice as to what was going on with him. Basically, all they do when he gets there, he's in psychosis. And the only information that they get is from somebody who's in psychosis. And just, he doesn't give any real information on his background, you know, what's been going on, you know, the accident, nothing like that. So he goes in there completely psychotic. They pump him up with antipsychotics, high doses of antipsychotics. And then, you know, I'm calling every single day trying to talk to a doctor. Nobody calls me. And, you know, and Josh is like, I'm ready to go home. Get me out of here. There's all these crazy people in here. And I'm just like, you know, and then so they had him first at the highest level. I don't know what it's called, but whatever. And then they moved him to, you know, the second level. And then after 5 days, once he's not sounding so psychotic, but Josh is so smart, I don't know, then he becomes their favorite. You know, he's just so sweet. And then 5 days later, it's like, he's fine. He's ready to go. So the only thing that the hospital does is stabilize them. You know, whenever you're on antipsychotics and mood.
They sedate them is what they do.
Yeah.
They sedate them to where they're like, as long as that, you know, if we can't hear or see any problems, you're fine. But they've done nothing to help him whatsoever.
And the whole time he's like, mom, nobody believes that it's weed here. It's not the weed, mom, you know, and it's just like, and then later he told me, mom, you know, once he was like, okay, he's like, they didn't even know what dabbing was, you know? So anyway, so he comes home completely zombied out. He's a zombie. He couldn't even walk from one room to the other without falling asleep. He was just sleeping all day. I'm like, nope. So we had to find a psychiatrist. That's another thing. To find a good psychiatrist is so difficult. A psychiatrist who's really going to sit there, you know, and care and listen to what's going on, you know, he starts doing better. You know, so this is his first. So there wasn't so much brain damage yet. So within, I guess, a week, I started noticing a huge difference. Huge. He was back. Oh, my God. He was getting up, making breakfast, you know, talking. We'd ride around having conversations. I had my son back, you know, and then it was about a month. And now he was still going through a lot of depression. For him, when he would, you know, stop smoking weed. So he would smoke weed to self-medicate just to not deal with all his emotions. So when he would not be on weed, he had to deal with his emotions. So he went through a lot of crying and just like, you know, he was sad about his friends and, you know, things like that. And then he would get a job and he would totally rock it. He would just get a job at a high-end, you know, restaurant and they would love him. He's doing great. His brain is coming back, you know. And then he relapses.
So let's talk about the second psychotic break then.
So then, you know, once he smokes weed, it's over. It takes him to this other place. And I think he hears this voice that controls him. And he cannot hear anything else. So he moves out. That's in November. And he had just gotten this car. He only had it like a month. And I said, okay, Josh, just know you're paying for your own insurance. Nobody's giving you a dime. You're on your own. He never believed in recovery or anything like that. You know, he always thought he was fine, that there was nothing wrong with him. So he moves out and he moved into this house in the Heights with two other guys. I don't hear from him very much anymore. I just know it was whatever was going on was not good. I felt it in my soul. But at this point, there's nothing. I already know. There's absolutely nothing that I can do. Nothing. What can I do? You know? Just sit back and just wait to get a phone call that he overdosed or something. You know? He's dead. You know? And so then in January, he comes over and, you know, for New Year's Eve. And I notice he's like way off. And I'm like, you know, I just hug him or whatever, he leaves. And then I get a phone call in February and he's like, Mom, is the middle of the day? I said, yeah. He said, so I'm okay, but the house is on fire. I'm like, oh gosh. And the thing with me, you know, from going through so much trauma, my first, you know, reaction is just to shut down and just feel nothing. Cause if not, I just, in the past, I get overwhelmed. And I said, the house is on fire. He's like, yes, it's completely engulfed. I'm like, okay, I'm on my way. So I drive to the Heights and there's helicopters everywhere. There's fire trucks everywhere. And I'm like, my son caused this. So he becomes obsessed with candles. And there's something about the candles to keep the demons away whenever he's smoking. He sees demons. He draws the demons. I have the pictures of the demons. And I walk up and the house is burned to the ground. I mean, there's nothing left. His car was right next to the house, burned up. And my son is just there in shock, you know, and I couldn't even have any emotions. We bring him home and here we go again. Another, he's completely psychotic. He's out of his mind, completely defiant and just out of his mind. So we walk into my house. I'm like, you cannot light one match in my house. No candles. I had to find all the candles and hide them. And, but he walked to the store and bought a candle. And he was like very cynical. I'd walk in and he's cooking and there's a candle lit just right there. Yeah. I'm like, Josh, he's like, yeah, this is a candle. It was no longer my, every time it wasn't my son. It was a completely different person. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? I said, no candles. So I'd get it, throw it away. And then the next day I was always checking on his room. I'd walk in, there'd be a candle lit.
Wow.
And then I'd go to the garage, you know, at night. I'm like, where's Josh? I'd go to the back and he would have candles. He kept going to the store and buying them. And, you know, like he'd make a circle. You know, it was very demonic. And he would just be sitting there in the dark with the candle. He was completely checked out.
That must have been really scary.
Oh, it was so scary. I really felt like I was like in a movie to just watch him, you know. So then one day I leave and I come back and in the garage, he has a whole fire pit going. And I'm like, that's it. We're calling the police. So we call the police and they already knew us. We kept, I mean, everybody on the block already, oh, it's for Joshua's house, you know, because, you know, so they come back. But every time he'd come, they're like, but, you know, he's okay, whatever. And then this time, so it was actually like six o'clock in the morning. Oh, because that night, my room is right next to him. And usually I could never, ever sleep because just I was always checking on him. But that night I knocked out. Who knows what happened? It was really weird. And then whenever I woke up, I'm like, where's Josh? And the window was open. I walked into his room. There was a circle of candles on the floor. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then I went to the garage and he's just sitting there. And I walked up. I said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm keeping the demons away. You know, I said, okay. So I called the police and I said, do y'all know he's not supposed to be lighting fires in my house. He just burned a house down over there. I said, he is not okay. You know, and we explained the whole thing. They still couldn't take him in. So they call a psychiatrist to come and assess him. And she decided he needed to go to the hospital. And then, so they took him in and he went to Bel Air mental hospital, same thing, bipolar. He was bipolar, completely ignored that I even spoke this time. They let me, you know, I spoke with his therapist and I talked to him and I just said, he's smoking a lot of weed. It is the weed that is, you know, at that time, I didn't know the word dabbing. You know, it was all new to me, you know, and I said, and I never saw him with the pen. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I still didn't make that, because he was still smoking blunts too. Like, you know, outside, he would just smoke the, you know, he didn't care. And then, but he also had that pen. Later, we found a whole bunch. Alex found all the empty cartridges. And so again, they were just like, no, he's bipolar.
Then did he end up getting hospitalized and going to rehab after that?
So, yes, you're right. He did. Here's what happened. They release him 7 days later. And again, he became their favorite. He's doing great. And, you know, this and that. And he's like, Mom, I love you. I miss you. I can't wait to go back, this and that. And I pick him up. And then, so we come home and it's around 3 o'clock. He goes to his room. And then 3 hours later, I'm in my room and he walks into my room and he's back talking about the demons. And I'm like, what happened? Wait a minute. You just got out. And I was supposed to fill a prescription for Invega. And I'm like, is it because I haven't filled a prescription? I'm like, we need to get to Walgreens. And then I get there and it's like $400. You know, I'm like, I cannot get this. Well, it turns out as soon as he got home, he had a dab pen here. As soon as he got home, he started dabbing. So then that night was crazy. I don't even remember all the details of it, but I just know that I called the very next morning. I called, you know, the hospital saying, my son is in complete psychosis again. Why didn't you send home the medication? I can't afford $400. And, she said, what? Because they finally got, I said, I need to talk to somebody. You know, they put me through to the head nurse. And she says, I'm calling about Joshua. She's like, Joshua Jimenez? I said, yes. He is totally insane. He's psychotic right now. She's like, no, not Joshua Jimenez. You know, I said, yes, Joshua Jimenez. And I said, but I can't afford the Invega. She said, honey, even if Invega fell from the sky, you need to get that boy back to the hospital. That is not okay, you know? So we have to call the police again. That's the only way we get him back, you know? So they take him back. And then Alex came over. And whenever he's in psychosis, he hoards things. It's really weird. He does these weird little things, like little ritualistic stuff. And there was just a huge mess in his room. And
it was all over. I mean, that's whenever I found them all over his room.
Yeah.
We thought we were under the impression that he at this point just fried his brain and he was having a psych, but then we found and we realized that it was actually the marijuana.
And so and we found called, the pin.
It was like under his sheets or something. Yeah. So then we that thankfully, after we called the hospital back, then they arranged for him to go to rehab after that.
I said, we just found empty cartridges of a vaping pen, of marijuana pens. I said, he came home to get high. And that's what causes his psychosis. I said, y'all might want to learn about cannabis-induced psychosis. So the very next day, they shipped him out. Yeah.
And then after that, he did have a good amount of time of recovery. And yes. That got with some friends that were with, you know, wanted to be sober too. And yes. At that point, did you feel like you had Joshua back again?
100%. So he goes to rehab for a month. But the problem was that they had him on lithium and those two other antipsychotics. And he was in a fog the whole time. So it's not like, the only thing it was good for was to detox him, you know? And I really believe really what saved my son was God. We were really praying for him, like for a real breakthrough. Because obviously he didn't come back saying, oh, because he met a friend there. Her name's Heather. And she lives with me now. And she's from North Carolina. And they became very good friends. And, you know, watching her and what she learned is so different than my job. My son just kind of came home detoxed. And there was a breakthrough, but I think it was a spiritual breakthrough where suddenly he was out of psychosis for the first time, like really out of complete psychosis. And I think God just really broke through. And whenever I went to go visit him, he was my son from before marijuana. Wait, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He was back.
Some really good, sustainable recovery. He's got a positive peer support with him. He's doing well. And then you saw the behaviors change again.
Yeah.
And then realized he was using.
So I do want to say this, with his third psychosis, with each psychosis, it does brain damage. And it's so much harder to come back from it. This one was really difficult and it was a long one. I think it took, although my son was back, like spirit, you know, in his heart, this time we had to deal with, for the first time, he saw everything clearly out of psychosis. So he had PTSD. For the first time, he had to process the accident. For the first time, he had to really process the house burning down, the house fire. You know, for the first time, he had to really process the demons. To him, in psychosis, they were in his room. He was having conversations with them, but they would disguise themselves as friends. And, you know, during that time, we prayed. And I just thank God that whenever he was young, you know, I raised him knowing Jesus. And we prayed and he knew God, you know, like he just really did. And he received Christ as a savior when he was 6 years old. And it was very real and very genuine. And he always loved the Lord. You know, in psychosis, it was, my son was still in there, but something else would take over my son, you know? So whenever he did, you know, come back from this one, you know, I just remember we'd have great conversations. God gave me that time with him.
I'm so glad you had that time with him. Before we get to the really, really hard part of the last psychosis, this last psychotic break, Alex, did you want to add anything up to this point?
No, I think she's covered it.
Okay. And I just want to recognize that this is very difficult. I cry along with you guys. And because I relate to a lot with what you're saying. And I know there's a lot of families struggling out there, and there's a lot of people lost and trying to figure out and living this nightmare is what it is. And you all do it with very grace and a lot of faith. And I appreciate that hope and that understanding that you're explaining today too. So the third psychotic break that ultimately ended
right.
in Joshua's
right.
death.
So I think, you know, so this one took us like 3 months of just, you know, deep depression. Again, he got off of the, you know, he got off of the antipsychotics, and then he got on an antidepressant or whatever. And then he started doing better. And then he got a job. It took a while for his brain to just function again, you know, like his memory and his cognition. And then, you know, a job at Whole Foods in the floral department. And he grew to really love it. And he got to, you know, use his artistic skills there. And, you know, he never missed a day. They loved him. And, but then I start noticing again, here we go. Just little things, you know, a little bit of the defiance coming back. And so I remember one day I caught it real quick. So there was another kind of little relapse, but I caught it real, really quick, you know? So I found the pen, and then, you know, he got back on track. And then he was totally just relapsed, and it was the whole thing again. And once we go there, and this time, and by this point, I'm just exhausted. Like, what do I do? Who do I call? Who's going to help my son? Nothing worked. What hospital? You know, I can't, you know, so at this point, all I could do is just release him to God, you know, and just pray for him. There's nothing. We tried everything. We tried everything. I mean, my daughter lives across the street, and he would, you know, get violent. And, you know, like when I say violent, just like calling, I mean, yelling at me, calling me names. And I was so used to it already. I mean, I'm like, this is not my son. So it's not like, you know what I mean? I would just take it, and it progressively got worse. And then, you know, so again, the little hoarding starts, you know, the little weird things. And he becomes very stingy and, you know, like, don't touch my food, you know, every just mean. So then all of a sudden, and he was saving money all summer. So he had all this cash from all his tips and everything. He probably had like $2,500. And the next thing you know, he goes on a spending spree, just buying stupid stuff, blowing his money. And he started hoarding flowers. It was a really weird thing. And then he's just out of his mind. He wasn't sleeping. He's dressing up. He's drawing all these demonic drawings. He's hanging all this crazy stuff in his room. It gets bad, very bad. And then December. So the whole month of December, he's just, you know, he's still functioning. He's still going to work. But I'm like, I can't believe he's still even working, because he's so odd. He was already in his, he talks a lot about Greek gods, and that he was, I forgot which god I was, but anyway, he would talk, oh, and that I was dead, that somebody already killed me, that I'm in heaven, and whoever I was somebody else. And, you know, it was crazy. And so then one day he packs his, you know, luggage, and he's like, I'm moving out. And I said, okay, you know, where are you going? But his plan was to go to LA, because he was hearing the voices again, and it was to go save the people from darkness, that God was talking to him. And so he had money, and the last time I saw him, he was getting an Uber. And then later that day, Alex calls me, and she's like, Mom, I found his Instagram or his Twitter. He's at the airport. I'm like, oh God. So I called him, and I said, why are you at the airport? And he said, oh, I'm going to Austin. You know, anyway, he ends up in LA. And then, so of course we're all mad. We're just like, we're so sick of it. Alex is, you know, we're just like so sick of his, you know, us trying to help him. And, you know, and then, so he's there, and our first thing was to do like the tough love, you know. He's like, because then he ran out of money. He stayed in a hostel one night, and the next day he has no money. So he says, who knows if he just wanted more money, you know, but he really didn't have much money. He's like, I don't have any money. Y'all send me money. He's calling his sisters. And she's like, I'm not sending money. We're like, no, he got there. He needs to figure it out, you know? And then he calls me that night, and he's crying. He's like, Mom, why did God send me here? I don't understand what I'm supposed to be here. And he was crying, and I knew he wasn't okay. And then I said, we have to get him home, you know? And so we put him, so we put him on the bus, we got him a ticket to come home. Maybe Alex can say the rest. Alex.
So what happened on the ride home, Alex?
So we bought him a bus ticket, and we did this for two reasons. Again, part of it was, you know, kind of some tough love of like, you know, we're going to give you some time to kind of decompress on a long bus ride home. But the other part was to buy us time to get him into a hospital, because if we immediately flew him home, we knew he wasn't okay. So anyways, he's on the bus. And then I guess it was the first day he'd been on it for like 12 hours, I think, and he had his location on, and then we noticed that he had turned it off, and then we can't get in touch with him. And then, you know, we're all, you know, starting to get worried. And then my sister calls and she's like, hey, Josh isn't okay. He got off in, you know, it's called Pecos, Texas. I mean, when you picture like Texas tumbleweeds, middle of nowhere, you know, it's, we laugh. Yeah. It literally could not have, you know, when we think of, especially being in somewhere like Houston where you have everything. I mean, Pecos is like, again, middle of nowhere. So where the Greyhound station is, right behind that are several train tracks. And when the bus pulled in, Josh saw the train tracks and he got off because he, you know, wanted to jump in front of them. And so once we find out that, you know, his mental condition, of course, we immediately are like, all right, we're going to get him home. Josh doesn't even know where he is. We think he's in Amarillo. I'm trying to buy him a plane ticket home. My mom calls the police. And then I'm like, turn your location on. Like, I need to, you know, coordinate this. And then once we realize where he is, there are no airports in Pecos. There's only two Greyhounds a day. There's one at 9 and one at 6.
Did you get a call from a doctor?
So we figure out that he's in Pecos, you know, but I'm trying. So it's the 23rd, and I'm trying to go get a mental health warrant because I knew, you know, Christmas was the next day. And that's the only way I would be able to put my son in the hospital. You know, I can't just, you know, I mean, it's crazy what we have to do. So I'm, you know, thinking I have to get over there before 1 o'clock. And then, you know, and I told Alex, you take care of, you know, Josh, figure out what we need to do with him. And then while I'm driving over there, I get a phone call from Joshua from another phone number. And he said, Mom, it's Josh. And I said, hey. And then he said, I'm borrowing somebody's phone. I broke my phone because apparently he was walking down the train tracks and it broke and totally shattered. And then he said, I'm thinking, oh my God, he lost his phone. How are we going to stay in touch with him? So, he had already told Madeline on the phone, I got off here because I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to go jump in front of the train. And I'm gonna, just like that, you know? And, so I said, Josh, give the phone to whoever let you borrow it. And then, he gets on the phone. He was such a kind man. He was an angel sent by God. And I just said, hi, I'm Joshua's mom. Thank you for letting me use the phone. I said, look, he's in psychosis right now. We're trying to get him home. I said, but he broke his phone. We need to stay in touch with him. You know, I'm going to give you my daughter's phone number. Please get in contact with her. And he said, okay, what's your son's name? I said, Joshua. And then she said, okay, I'm going to talk to him. Send me your daughter's number. So turns out that this kind man was a doctor. He was a pediatrician, a cardiologist. His name's Michael. And he spoke with Joshua, and Joshua told him he wanted to kill himself. And his plan was to jump in front of a train. So he immediately called Alex and said, I am calling
the police,
the police to have him admitted. He needs to be in a mental health hold. He cannot be alone.
So again, because he's in such a remote area, he lets us know, you know, in my world, that's a psychiatric hold. I'm not in a hospital setting. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have, you know, let them know, report that he just, you know, admitted that he wants to kill himself, so they can hold him for you. And that will give you time to go pick him up. And again, that makes perfect. Now, you know, we're just so relieved. And so then he does call the police, and then an officer gets there with the paramedic, and just like Josh always has done before, he switches it on and is like, I'm fine. I just, you know, I just want to go home. I was, you know,
he said, I missed my bus or something like that. You know,
but he plays it off and is like, and then my mom even calls and tells them like, look, you don't understand. Like he's been tweeting, he wants to kill himself. He just admitted to the officer. He admitted to my daughter this morning that he wants to kill himself. He's not okay. Like he does this all the time. And they tell my mom, well, you know, he's totally fine in front of us and we can't hold him because it would be like kidnapping essentially, to hold him against his will. Now for everyone to, you know, who's watching this, that's actually not the case. They can hold someone, but the point I want to make is if you so happen to be with an officer who doesn't know the protocol, you could very well be in the same situation that we were in. So they said that they're going to keep an eye out on him, get him another bus ticket. And again, we're still kind of thinking that if you're not going to hold him, that someone's going to at least maybe keep an eye out on him or like check on him. And they did say they were going to do that. But several hours went by and both my mom, like I had this feeling, and then I leave my house and I walk to my mom's house and I see her in her car and we just like knew something was wrong and we start calling. And again, it's this really small police department. We're not talking like Houston or Los Angeles where your phone's ringing off the hook and there's crime everywhere. Like there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to get in front of the police officer who we were speaking with. And they're very dismissive of like, oh, well, they're not available right now, but they'll give you a call back. I mean, it's like the most brutal couple of hours just waiting. And then finally we do get a call back from a detective. And all he says to my mom is, you know, I'm sorry. And then she hands the phone off and she's screaming, of course, in the background. And then the detective tells us, you know, there was an accident involving a train and Joshua did not make it. And of course, we're just, you know, all in shock at that point. Like, I mean, wow. It just was like,
he did exactly what he said he was going to do. He was suicidal. A doctor wrote a report and we still don't understand why that wasn't enough. I spoke with the officer. I'm like, please just hold him. What's the worst thing that can happen? You know, I mean, I showed you the tweet, right? Aubrey, you know, yes. He wanted to kill himself.
I mean, on their police log, it's like a call log where it's like line by line of like, you know, physician calls, reports, male subject wants to jump in front of train. And then like two lines above that, it's caller is subject's mom, reports wants to commit suicide. And so I'm thinking like, you literally have this written. Don't know where you got this in your head that somehow, like, you know, when people are like, get help, like, you know, that, and to me, it's almost such a joke that they're like, you know, if you're suicidal, there's help available. There's really actually not that much help available.
There really is.
It's not, you know, so I don't know how that wasn't enough, but to them, and then, you know, come to find out later, thankfully there was a justice of the peace who was again, another angel over there, but even the mayor tried to like blame it on Joshua and said like, well, that it was ultimately that kid's fault for, yeah. And the judge actually got in a fight with him and told him like, no, sir, you had this kid in your possession. Multiple people, including a physician, told you this kid was suicidal and he did what they told you he was going to do, you know? And again, if they would have even asked a couple more questions of like, what are you even doing here to begin with?
Right.
Why don't you get more information of like, what's going on with this? Like, how did you end up in the middle of nowhere? And why are you in the middle of nowhere? Or, you know, I would understand if you were like overwhelmed, overworked city like Houston, right, where you don't have the resources. But even when we were there, it's like, there's not a lot going on over there. It's, I mean, if anything, it's like a theft on an oil rig, but it's not like, you know, in Houston where you're getting constant calls of, you know, domestic violence or, and now to be fair, you know, and my mom and I have talked about this. If we had the chance to tell that officer, like, we really don't hold you responsible. Unfortunately, the system failed Josh long before he ever stepped foot in Pecos, Texas. And I'm sure that he will carry that with him. But again, like, we forgive him. We forgive everyone that was involved in that situation. And that, of course, is, you know, not easy, but it's also, that's not for us to hold that on him, you know. Yeah. What we want from this is for it to be a learning experience, again, of all aspects of Joshua's story, you know, from, you know, how marijuana impacts the brain, for physicians to be informed, for police officers to be informed. You know, you're trained to be a police officer. You're not trained to be a mental health expert. But even the mental health experts that are in hospitals,
they don't get it.
You don't. Yeah. You have to understand that there is now that marijuana is becoming so much more easily accessible, and you have all these people that are coming through. Again, this psychosis looks, it's not like you're, you know, when you picture, like, you know, like drug addicts who are, like, on the street and they're, like, talking to themselves and they look the part. Just because they don't look the part, or just because they don't, that doesn't mean that it still needs to be taken seriously. And again, I remember one of Joshua's first psychosis, the doctor said, you know, it's so, every time that you go into psychosis, it's like a stroke or a heart attack on the brain. And so eventually you reach a point where there's no coming back. And the emphasis that I want to make on that is, we're talking about marijuana, the drug that's always, it's harmless. Nobody dies from marijuana. Nobody, but it's, yes, people do.
That it is killing our children. And it will completely destroy your child's life. And it is addictive. And these dabs, it's not just marijuana. It's a drug. It is a drug. And it's so toxic. And, you know, I go to Walgreens and I love to look at magazines, you know, so I'll just kind of go. And then I always see, you know, weed and women, or there's this weed magazine and it's pink and you open it up and it's just like all the benefits, you know, for this, for that. And, you know,
it's promoted as like a miracle drug. It's promoted
unless this happens to you, anybody would look at that and think, wow, so-and-so is doing it and they're perfectly fine. And it's good for this and it's good for that. And, you know, for depression, it was even saying it could even help schizophrenia. I could not believe it. And I'm just looking at it and it just looks like so medicinal and healthy, and it's a plant, you know, so
natural.
Yes.
There's no downside to it.
And now the dollar store is selling these Delta 8s. God knows who's making those things.
Well, again, let's just think back to what happened when, you know, vapes first came on the scene. It was Juul and whatever else that spread like wildfire, and all of a sudden all the kids have it and you're seeing it everywhere. And all these parents are like furious that their kids are, you know, addicted to nicotine and have such access to it. Well, you know, again, thankfully when you're detoxing from nicotine, I mean, yes, that can, you know, be challenging in and of itself, but you don't have to do that in a psychiatric hospital. You're not requiring, you know, hospitalization. One of my biggest fears is, as they continue to expand access and now all these kids have their hands on it, what happens when all these kids are in psychosis? Again, we went through this with Joshua, and I meet people every day that, you know, again, it's not everybody that I meet, but when you realize this isn't that super rare story, and there's actually more people who are like that, hey, that happened to me. My son's going through that, or my sister's going through that from marijuana. And again, once we're already in a mental health crisis, there's statistics that, you know, Texas jails for, since they don't have enough beds, a lot of times those people end up in jail. So
yeah,
parents are okay with that being if you're willing to risk, hey, if my kid gets in this and they're not okay, get comfortable with the idea that your child will be in jail because that is the only place that they will be able to get, they won't have access to it. That's where we're at right now.
That's probably the best place at this point to be in jail, because it is the only place to detox. And if you're in the right jail, or you know, then you can maybe have access if you need mental therapy. Health. You know, you'll get it there in jail. That's if you are one of those people that it just, your brain doesn't take it very well, your future's over. Everything parents did to get you there, the great schools, you know, the best of everything, it's over. You don't get to, you have no future. Your whole future, you know, you may be lucky, you know, but I just don't know too many people who have easily, once they go to the psychosis, but you know, like once the psychosis starts and this, you know, pattern starts, no more college, you know, all that work, the tuition, all that. Now the only thing that matters is your child's mental health and that they're alive. College does it, their grades, what college they go to, none of that matters. You know,
as much as we like to say that, oh, there is no stigma around mental health and addiction, there's absolutely a stigma around mental health and addiction. And when, you know, mention any of that, your child is kind of seen, I mean, even with, you know, police, all of us, like, you're kind of immediately put into this other category of like, here we go. And no longer really seen as a person.
Yes. What is your message to the elected officials, like the state of Texas, the people that are out on the airwaves, getting front and center on these big platforms that say nothing bad has happened from the expansion of marijuana, nothing bad has happened from the legalization of marijuana? What is your message to them?
My message to them would be, I would ask, are you serious? Do you really know what's going on with weed? Have you done any research? Because marijuana kills my son. And so if you're even thinking about legalizing it, you know, you are just, you're bringing destruction to our city, you know, to our families. You are going to just put everybody in danger, everybody, because that puts, you know, a child out there or a person out there, you know, intoxicated or, you know, high to kill somebody else, you know? So no, I would say I would not vote for anybody who says that they want to legalize weed, you know, or even the Delta 8, like get that off of the shelves. Why is that still being sold? Why was Bluebell ice cream shut down and all the ice cream removed off the shelves because there were 4 deaths, or I don't know. I don't remember all the details to that, you know, but their whole company shut down, you know. There's been so many deaths, you know, deaths and mental illness and, you know, deaths from being, you know, high, they kill somebody else, you know. Why is this stuff being sold to our kids? Why is this still legal? Why? Why haven't they taken that off the shelves? You know, and why does the media cover that up? Why aren't we hearing about that in mainstream media? You know, you never hear about that. It's so rare. And if you do, you have to dig for it. There's no warnings. Oh, but Bluebell sure didn't make it, you know, or whatever, you know, a car seat or a car. I don't know why they get, you know, pulled off or so. Yeah, I'm just saying, you know what, be very, you know, and to the parents, be very diligent, watch what they're doing. I would even say, don't even allow kids to vape. You know why? Because it is the gateway to the next thing. And this vaping is very high in nicotine. And our kids' brains are still developing at that age. It's causing brain damage, without a doubt, without a doubt. You know, so no, they haven't done away with smoking. It's worse now. It is worse. So
good points. Very good points. Alex, what is your response to those elected officials?
Well, let's look at what the COVID pandemic just did to our healthcare systems and, you know, how, you know, our medical system was just so overwhelmed with all these patients they didn't know what to do with or how to treat them. And all the trial and error that went through and all the people who died because we didn't know how to help them, you know, that's what we're in for once you open the floodgates. We're
exactly
going to be in the same exact situation of all these people that are coming in and they don't know how to help them. You know, again, I want both my mom and I, this isn't a whole attack on marijuana industry on its own. Like, you know, again, there could be a time and a place for that. But the problem is that, you know, since our brains don't finish developing at 25, when you open those floodgates for kids who are adolescents, who obviously don't really have great decision-making skills at that time and aren't really thinking about the effects and long-term consequences on their brain, you don't want to be in the place that the hell that my mom and I lived through for 3 years. When you are in that place and realize there's no manual for this, you're scouring the internet, having to find Facebook groups, having to call clinics all day long, having to beg and plead with healthcare providers who care more about regulations of, sorry, that's against HIPAA policy.
Right.
You're having to beg, do everything. And it's like talking to a brick wall, trying to save your loved one. And again, we're not talking about cocaine or heroin or opioids. We're talking about marijuana.
Exactly.
So that would be my message to them. Are you prepared to invest the hundreds of millions of dollars of, you know, in mental health care or outpatient facilities? Because if you're not prepared to take care of me then don't open the floodgates and tell me that it's okay for me to do this. And then you're stuck.
Yeah.
Very good point. And I've kept you guys long enough. I just want to end with one more question. And I know this is exhausting, and I encourage you to just kind of really take care of yourself for the next few days after expressing this. Lean on God, let him carry you. Call me if you need to talk. You know, it's rough. And I know you've talked about this a lot, but I know like this has been a long period of time. You've talked about this, but your voices are so important. And what you've said here today is so important. You might not see the results of it right now, but what you're doing here today is God's work. And mm-hmm. from the bottom of my heart, I thank you. I thank you for this.
And we thank you, Aubrey. Thank you for everything that you've done. And thank you for being there for me the days after Josh passed. You were an angel by my side. You really were. And I look back at the video that you made and I'm just like, just in awe how God just put all these people in my life, you know, in our lives, these really special angels. And you were one of them. And thank you.
Thank you for allowing, thank you for allowing me to be part of this journey. It's an honor. And Joshua would not die in vain as long as I have a platform, and we'll keep building this platform of families that have been impacted and stand together and link arms together to let them know this is not okay. And our kids matter. And Joshua's at the top of that list. He matters. And I just want you to both describe how your life is like now after Joshua's passing.
For me, I take it day by day. The first month was, I was just in the cloud of grief. And I feel like I was just covered by God and his protection and his Holy Spirit. And he was so gracious. He was so gracious with us. And the fact that I'm even having this conversation and I find myself just being okay some days. But the reassurance that I have and the peace that I have is that I know where God is, where Josh is now, and he is in heaven. And I know that the very moment it happened, the accident happened, before it even happened, God came down, his angel swooped Joshua and took him home. You know, God rescued my son.
He rescued him. I don't think there was going to be an out for him. And my son suffered so much. His heart did, you know? So God took him home. I'm actually okay. I miss him. I miss him so much. But I know he's safe. He's safe now. And he's in what better place than in heaven? So we're actually okay. But that's only because of God. You know, and now we're going to fight with this. I don't want this to ever happen to anybody, to another child, another family. But we're okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Sonia. Alex, how is your life like now?
No. Similar to I remember the day after Josh passed, and, you know, it literally felt like a piece of me had been, you know, ripped out of my chest. When people ask if I have siblings, I've always been one of three. It's always been, I'm the oldest, and I have a younger sister and a younger brother. And I hate that at 22 years old, in reality, I feel like I lost my brother, you know, several years before he passed, really the last 3 years. It was in and out, but, I carry his memory, but like my mom said, I think we've been so blessed to have this supernatural peace and covering over us that has really sustained. Even when I talk about it, or, you know, say like my brother died and share details and, you know, the look on everyone's face. And there's really no other way to explain the fact that we are okay other than that God was a part of this. Mm-hmm. And like my mom said, he came to rescue Joshua. And for that, we're so thankful that, you know, we will get to see Joshua again someday. Yeah. And I imagine the best of Joshua now that he's free from it's like if every day that he was on earth, another chain was on top of him.
Yeah.
You could see it. You could visibly see this crushing weight that was on him with no escape. There was no way to escape. And he's free of all of that now. So, you know, I miss him so much. I think about him all the time. But we're blessed. We're blessed to know that, you know, God never forgets any of his children.
That's right.
And he came and with his own hand came and took Joshua with him. Yeah. And he's, you know, we know that, you know, I feel like the Lord puts it on our hearts. Like, it's okay. You guys are okay. If anything, my mom and I joke, he's like, y'all worry about yourselves. I've got Joshua and he's okay now. He's not in pain. He's okay.
Aubrey, I want to share, you know, something else. So the day before we went to Pecos, to go pick up Joshua's ashes and, you know, to go ask questions and all that kind of stuff. The night before, Alex called me and we were both feeling anxiety, you know, about going to see where it happened. And then Alex said, Mom, but you know what? God gave me a vision that right before the train hit him, there was like all this light that surrounded him and like he was rescued and God just picked him up before the train even hit. And I said, I got the same vision. So God just confirmed that. And whenever we did go to the tracks, it was so peaceful, wasn't it, Alex?
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. We just walked along the tracks where it happened and we felt nothing but peace. And that only comes from God, that we can save him.
Thank you for sharing this journey with Every Brain Matters and these precious moments. Thank you for your honesty and your vulnerability and your truth. But I'm going to pray that you take extra good care. There's some extra comfort and some peace that surrounds you for the next few days after speaking this, because I know the adversary will try to get to you harder now that you've done this, mm-hmm. And especially after we publish it. So some extra support, extra armor around you all, and know that I'm standing with you.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Okay, I love you both.
Love you too, Aubrey.
Okay.
Bye. Bye. Love you. Bye.
Thank you, Sonia and Alex, for sharing Joshua's story with us. Our hearts break for you, and we give you our deepest condolences. We ask the viewers to share this podcast, send it to your legislators, send it to Governor Abbott. Please help us get a correction to the hemp law. We need to outlaw all these THC variants and hold the line in Texas so we don't become like California and Colorado. Our kids are worth it, our community is worth it, our state is worth it, and our country is worth it. This marijuana nightmare is destroying many lives. Please subscribe and stay tuned.